This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
And we're on to segment number four of our continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh. Let's head to the courtroom.
All right, thank you. Welcome back. Cross-examination, Mr. Barber.
Hey, please, the court. Good afternoon, Agent Radofsky. Did I say that right?
Yep. Sounds good to me.
Let's start first with the GM data that recently came in. I think that may have made things a little more clear, right? We don't really need to look at a lot of those cell phone plot tower plots now that we have the exact position of the car, do we?
I agree, yeah. The GM data is pretty clear.
At first, you did an analysis of a driving to and from the office in Hampton in the middle of the day. Not too interested in that, but let's skip to the drive from Moselle to Alameda.
Okay.
How long was that drive? How long did it take him from start to finish?
I'd have to look back the drive. So you're referring to the 9:06 time?
Yes, sir.
So looks like 9:07. To 9:22, so about 15 minutes.
Hey, and do you need, is it more like 16 minutes?
16 minutes,
pen and
yeah.
Paper, 16 minutes?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, and coming back, how long was it?
About 18 minutes.
18 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Approximately.
So the top speed and the way back we saw was a little faster, but it actually took a little longer to make the return trip. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Okay.
And you're referring to the same drive to Alameda and back?
Okay. Exactly, yes.
Okay.
Are you aware that Senior Special Agent David Owen did a test drive from Alameda to Moselle on January 3rd of this year?
That's correct. I was in the passenger seat of that.
And how long did that take?
I would have to see the data. I don't remember.
You don't have that? You don't know if it was 17 minutes and 35 seconds?
If I was presented with something, it could be, but I do not have that number in front of me.
If it were that, it would be right in between those two times that we just saw for Mr. Murdaugh going back and forth, would it not?
It could, but there was different variables at the time.
It was during the day, wasn't it?
It was.
So on this way back, there's that little 80 mile an hour spurt. How long did that go on?
I am unsure of that. It's just the data point is plotted. It doesn't give a, it just gives you a timestamp. It doesn't say for how long.
In your experience, I think you talked earlier that you would respond to calls in a marked car with blue lights.
Not a marked car, but an unmarked car with blue lights, yep.
Is it extremely unusual for someone who's on a straightaway in a rural road at night to give it some gas on a little burst?
A little bit of gas, but when you know it's 55 and you have deer and other environmental factors that play in.
Yes, but it's not that unusual, is it, for someone to give it a little gas on a straightaway in a rural road?
It depends on what a little gas is.
But the overall speed that he went to get from where he was going, coming from to where he's going to, as far as you know, is in line with the test drive that you were in the passenger seat for?
If that is correct, what you mentioned, yes.
So like right in between those two, actually.
Like I said, I don't have that test drive data in front of me, but
Let's move on then to when he drove past that point where Maggie's cell phone was later recovered. And I think that may start on slide 23.
23?
Actually, if you go back one slide. Right. So we're in slide 22, sorry.
22? Okay.
So he's going 37.2 miles an hour here?
That's correct.
And next slide. Now he's still approaching it at 42, so he's accelerating gently. Is that fair?
That's correct.
Next slide. Looks like he is just past it, going slightly faster than he was on the previous slide. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Next slide. He's continuing to, now he's a good bit down the road there at 45, but is it fair to say he's continuing a fairly gentle acceleration?
I would say so, yes.
So what we saw as he passed it, he did not slow down and speed up as he went past that point. He continued his same gentle acceleration?
Per the data, yes.
And we won't go through it, but if we went down later to when it goes down to the bottom of the screen, mm-hmm. it would show that he slowed down slightly corresponding when he sent that text, go to see him, be right back. Is that accurate?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. We'll be done with that. I'm going to now just skip with this data all the way to when he approaches the kennel coming from the house right before he calls 911.
Okay.
The direction he is driving as he comes right up, right before he parks, would he have his? Would he be illuminating the bodies of Maggie and Paul?
Per the aerial that I'm looking, I don't know if you want to put it on the screen so we can show, but per the aerial, it would be coming around that curve and it would illuminate at least Maggie's body.
Would the illumination, is it going back towards that space between the barn and the kennels where Paul's body was out?
Like I said, this is just a data plot.
You could determine that, could you not, from just the last two points, because that would show you the direction that the vehicle is pointed.
It doesn't say the vehicle's pointed that direction, it just says
point A to point B, being a car, it would have to be.
Yeah, but where it final rests, I don't know which direction it's
but pointed. As it's moving.
As it's moving, yes, you would think it would.
Right. So the headlights certainly on Maggie. It would appear from the plot maybe on Paul as well. And does he park near Maggie's body?
I do not know where he parked the first time, because all we have is when the deputies arrived the second time.
So on your plot.
On the plot here.
When he comes the first time before mm-hmm. the 911 call, where does his vehicle stop in relation to Maggie's body?
It stops before it.
Is it, how close is it?
I do not have a
descriptive. Is it very close? Is it pretty much right there?
I wouldn't say it's right on top of it, but it's
very
it's
close
in the area.
So as he's pulling up to the scene, he can certainly see one, if not both, bodies on the ground, and he stops right next to Maggie. Is that fair?
I'm just looking at the data provided. I was not there on scene.
But the data provided is the location of the car and the location of the body.
But I don't know what he would have saw or what the car would have saw at that time.
You don't know what would be directly in front of his car as it was moving from point to point to point?
I was not out there.
You don't know which direction the car would be pointing as it moved?
We know which direction the car would be pointing, but where, what he saw or what the final resting place of the car is.
Is the car's headlights pointing at the bodies as he's pulling up?
I cannot give a definitive answer on that because I was not there, and the data I have.
I'm asking from the data.
The data does not say.
I'll finish this answer.
You must give the witness an opportunity to respond fully. You may proceed.
There is no data that says that the headlights were pointing in a specific direction or at a specific object, so I cannot answer that.
When you say there's no data saying the headlights are pointing in a specific direction, were they not pointed along the line that would connect the last two data points before the car stops and goes in the park?
For the drive, but it does not show, I mean, it could be at an angle. It's such a little dot, but does not show a vehicle in its exact position of it, so I cannot answer that.
Right, and we're not talking about the dot. We're talking about a line connecting two dots.
Okay,
but you were asking about the dot. And a car moving along that line, the headlines would be pointed down the line, correct?
Objection's overruled.
Ask your question again.
We're talking not about a point, but about a line, mm-hmm. and a car moving down a line. As it moves down that line between two points, would its headlights not be pointed in the same direction down that line?
I would assume.
So he arrives at the scene, gets out, presumably he goes in the park, and then 20 seconds later, first dials 911. Is that your testimony?
Yep.
So pulling up on the scene, body's in his headlight, presumably knows something's horribly wrong, gets out 20 seconds to the first call to 911. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Which was actually misdialed 9111, and he had to redial it a second time, which was at 18 seconds, correct?
That's correct. Okay.
So he had 20 seconds, and I think there's maybe an implication, or that's not enough time.
Objection is sustained to the comment of counsel.
Sir, may I approach?
Is this timer set for 20 seconds?
It is.
Okay. When I say so, would you please press the start button?
Okay.
Now. That was 20 seconds, would you agree?
Per your phone, yes.
You don't dispute the phone accuracy, do you? If the person getting out of the car had seen the bodies already and already knew something is horribly wrong, do you believe that that is an unreasonably short period of time to inspect and call 911?
I'm here to testify on this data, not the hypothetical. I think you're asking the wrong person on that.
Fair enough. We'll move on. Okay, I'm going to turn to your condensed timeline, okay. Which I think is State's Exhibit 519. I'm going to ask you to turn to page 21. Okay.
Okay.
And towards the bottom, 9:06 and 20 seconds, it says Maggie Murdaugh's iPhone sideways orientation.
That is correct.
And meaning that her phone at that time went to a sideways orientation?
So between 9:06:12 and 9:06:20, from the phone experts, that it started at 9:06:12 and it ended at 9:06:20.
Okay.
Those two orientations.
I'll ask it this way.
Okay.
A second later, what would be the orientation of her phone?
From a second from what, the 20?
After that, yes, at 9:06:21.
I do not know.
Well, then what does this entry mean, if it doesn't mean that it...
There's nothing that says 9:06:21 on here.
Right, so what happened at 9:06 and 20 seconds?
It finished its orientation change to sideways.
What does that mean?
So it went from a portrait. Mm-hmm. So let me get the phone. So it went from portrait to sideways.
And until
in those between the you
go
know
ahead, sorry
between 9:06:12 and 9:06:20, mm-hmm. is what it's showing. That's why we have the little purple on the right hand side to show that it's connected. It's all one big sequence, per our phone experts mm-hmm. that have previously testified.
So it would remain in portrait until remain in the landscape orientation until the next change?
I am unsure of that. I'm not a phone expert, so I am unsure of that. I was given this data, and this is how it was relayed to me, and this is how I have put it in this timeline.
Okay. So if you were to go to page 19, please.
Okay.
And the very last entry there, Maggie Murdaugh's iPhone vertical orientation.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
So this was all given to me from different, you know, data sources. So how I read this is that the phone has turned to a vertical orientation. So I guess
has turned to a vertical orientation, and
because we have a sideways orientation and then we have a vertical orientation. Okay.
Just keep scanning down until you get to the next orientation change for Maggie Murdaugh's phone, please.
From page 19?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
We're just looking for the next orientation change. Okay.
I believe it's going to be that 90612.
And what does that say?
Implements an orientation change to portrait.
But the previous change was to portrait, was it not?
It says vertical orientation.
So there's no intervening orientation change. It just goes to portrait and then changes to portrait again?
As I read the data, yes, that's correct. Like I said, I'm not a phone expert. I was given these different pieces to plot, and this is how they've been plotted.
When you're given these pieces to plot, do you ever notice if things don't seem to make sense or don't match with other data? Do you alert anyone?
So we have phone experts that review that. So they have reviewed the data, and I do not know if that's something that they came across.
And you can't tell me with that last, or can you tell me this? The last orientation change here on page 21, is that the last change on her phone until the extraction at the SLED lab?
I'd have to go through and double check. Would you like me to do that?
You may.
Okay. You said orientation change, correct?
Yes, sir.
Per this condensed timeline, you are correct. That'd be the last orientation change that I see noted.
I mean, that's the last one until the phone was downloaded?
I believe so.
You showed State's exhibit.
The thing is, this is just the timeline, so it could be in what's already in evidence from Lieutenant Britt Dove, but in this timeline, that's the only one showing.
Okay.
Well, and for orientation changes, we were really only concerned for the day of,
right,
for this timeline.
Show what's been previously admitted as Defense Exhibit 38. And go to the last page. This was previously admitted in evidence during the examination of Lieutenant Dove. It's a complete list of every orientation change recorded on her phone as of the extract. Is the last one listed, the very last one, the 906 orientation change?
The 90622 on the bottom?
Yes, sir.
That's correct. The 906, yep, the far bottom column.
Yes. Can we show State's Exhibit 278? This was also admitted in that examination. This is a photo taken in the SLED lab before the extract, actually 5 days before the extract. This phone is in portrait mode, is it not?
The way I read it, yes, that is portrait mode.
So that very last orientation change we saw was to portrait mode, because there are no subsequent orientation changes.
I assume so, yes.
And not landscape, as it says on this.
The thing is, before this picture was taken, you have to remind yourself that, you know, SLED got the phone, and then this photo was taken at a lab.
Yes.
So I don't know. I don't know what happened. People, you know, it's been moving around, manipulated. I don't.
But we just looked at a complete list of all the orientation changes, did we not? It wasn't time limited to a particular day. It's everything on the phone.
Like I said, I did not produce that document, so I'm going to have to go on your word on that.
Let me ask this before we kind of move on from this. Okay. It's been stated a few times in testimony, and I think you did as well, that you don't get an orientation change recorded when the screen is off. Is that correct?
That is my understanding from previous testimony.
Okay. So my screen is off. If I turn it, like, to get an orientation change and it's off, if I just stand here for a while, however long, an hour, and without moving the phone, turn the screen on, will there be an orientation change?
That is a technical question for an expert that we had up here yesterday. I am not an expert, and I am not a phone expert.
Where I'm going with that is simply, you don't know yourself in preparing this timeline whether the orientation changes that you're putting on here correspond with movement of the phone at that moment.
I do not. I'm going off of data I was given from phone experts that gave me the data and it has been put on this timeline.
I'm going to turn now to the timeline and really focus on the timeline for Maggie Murdaugh. And I'm going to skip, you know, kind of close to the time that we're...
Are you still on the condensed or the full
time? I'm going to be on the condensed the entire time. I'm not going to refer to the other one.
Okay.
And I want to start on page 17 with that group text that Maggie Murdaugh read that came in at 8:31, but she read it at 8:49:26.
Okay.
And I guess the actual reading of that would be on page 19 for your reference. We'll start there.
On page 19, you said?
Yes.
Okay.
You have some screen off on times here, but you didn't put every time the screen went on and off, did you?
I do not recall. I'd have to look at what was given.
So you don't know if the screen of her screen went off at 8:49:28, came back on.
Everything should be on this document.
Okay. Did her screen go off at 8:49:28 and come back on at 8:53:08?
I have a screen on at 8:49:20.
And when did it go off?
I do not see it on here.
Well, let me ask it this way. Do you know whether the screen went off at 8:49:28 and came back on at 8:53:08?
8:53:08. I do not unless I have it on here.
Okay. And then she has steps that begin at 8:53:15. Is that correct?
For this document, yes.
When you were looking at the step data, did you look at the corresponding distance data that goes to the step data?
I was just provided the timestamp and then the steps.
Are you aware that the phone in the same database keeps distance data with the step data?
I have been made aware of that.
But you have not looked at any of that distance data?
Mm-hmm. I was told that it's not accurate, it's not reliable, the distance, so you know, I did not focus in on that.
So... Would you think that it is possibly, well, just as an investigator, on your spreadsheet, I won't bother to put it up, but you had a bunch of time periods where Alec had steps, mm-hmm. different times. Do you think there would be any relevance to whether the number of feet per step and all those different increments was extremely consistent?
Is there any relevance to it?
Would it maybe suggest the same person was walking?
Objections overruled.
I would have to I didn't do the feet per sep, so I'd have to see the data.
I understand that. And the question is, would there be any relevance to an investigation to seeing that the feet per step were extremely consistent for disparate time periods of the same phone?
Like I said, this was just a tool that we used. It could be. It just was not as bored. Okay.
And if this time period, 8:53 with Maggie Murdaugh's steps to 8:55:32, mm-hmm. if the distance covered in that time were short, meaning she was moving particularly slowly, could that have any relevance?
It depends, but that distance is, we're told, is highly inaccurate, and everything is in an estimate. So even the steps, that's, you know, we're told by the phone expert that's an estimate. That's not an exact number. The same, I would assume, for the distance.
So you don't think, I mean, you did not check to see if the speed at which Maggie Murdaugh was moving on that very last increment, the last time the phone says she was ever walking, there was no, how fast is she going? Is she running? Is she creeping? No one looked at that.
Objection, facts not in evidence.
Objection's overruled.
I did not look at that, no. I cannot say for anyone else.
And the same question for Alec Murdaugh. Did anyone look for, I think you have, you know, over eight of these increments listed out, whether he was going particularly fast, unusually fast for him, unusually slow for him, the same speed he always goes. Did anyone look at that?
All we have here is the data that is on that sheet.
And you do have these steps per minute, but do you have any data suggesting that within, and I'll pick one just to make the question simpler, Alec Murdaugh's first, I'll pick an even easier one, entry number 30.
Okay.
Which is when he's at Alameda and then part of when he's leaving Alameda, is that correct?
That is correct, based by the time.
And it says 60 steps over almost, just a little short of 10 minutes?
I believe so, yep.
So, of course, it's slightly more than six steps per minute, which would be a step every 10 seconds. So this time period is not saying that he's going that many steps per minute, right? It's saying he walked and then he didn't walk and he walked. And is that fair?
It's just giving us an analysis, a general overview of, you know, our estimated steps that it gives us and then estimated steps per minute. That's all it is. It's just a general.
Well, I'll just ask open-ended. Why is this last column steps per minute here? Why are you presenting this?
It's just another way to present the data.
So turning back to, I think we were on page 19.
Okay.
Maggie Murdaugh's phone is walking. Now we had from previous testimony, an activation of the Siri user interface with the side button. Did you recall that from previous testimony?
I do not, but it could have been.
Okay, you don't recall previous testimony about that. Bring up Defense Exhibit 41. And there's a begin and end. It's all the same time there in the bottom couple rows. You can see 8:53:20. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this refreshes or if you recall, or if perhaps you know from experience that the Siri interface can be activated by squeezing and holding the right button on the phone. Do you know that?
I believe so, if you have it, you know, activated to do that.
So the phone's walking, it's in somebody's hand. Now, this is something that's not in your timeline, but again, was certainly discussed with Tenant Dove. You know, 8:54:32, the screen comes on, and a couple seconds later, there's a camera access. Do you mm-hmm. recall that?
I do.
Okay, and that's not on your timeline?
It is not.
Okay. Now, we had, that came up in testimony with both experts, and I believe, do you recall Lieutenant Dove said he had not, that it was possible to find out what caused that, but he had not himself looked to see?
That's correct.
And I believe Investigator Grubb said he did not know why. Is that correct?
I believe so.
But it's knowable, according to the previous testimony?
That's correct.
But no one's checked to see?
To my knowledge, no.
And then after that, there's some orientation changes. And then finally, the screen goes off, I believe, for an extended, more extended period of time at 8:55:36. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, after this period, there's nothing else that happens with her phone other than missed calls and texts, except that final orientation change. Is that accurate?
That is accurate.
Now, does that fact that we aren't seeing anything after 8:55:36, does that mean that she was dead at 8:55:36?
Like I said, this is just data that I plotted.
So the answer is no?
I don't
know
the answer.
It does not mean that?
I have to go by the data here, and there's no activity.
Right.
You can take that however you want, but there's no activity.
I mean, is it fair, and this isn't trying to be tricky, if use of the phone ceases as mm-hmm. time goes on, it's more and more likely there's something amiss, right? The first second no one's using the phone mm-hmm. is normal. I mean, someone might easily go, even Paul might go 5 minutes without using his phone, but as you keep going on, it gets a little more likely something's wrong, mm-hmm. right? Is that fair?
I would say so.
Okay.
But
so
yeah,
it's not an immediate thing that, well, the last...
Wouldn't be able to finish the answer he started.
I apologize, you're right. I honestly thought he had finished.
I'm good, go ahead.
So it wouldn't be fair to say that if the last usage was at some particular second that the person was dead that second, right? It would create an inference that would increase in strength over time that no one's using the phone, something's wrong, right?
I can't answer that. I mean, I don't have the knowledge on that.
Do you recall in previous testimony that Special Agent Owen said with regard to Almeida and I think a blue raincoat that it would take, in his estimation, 5 to 10 minutes to dispose of evidence already wrapped up? Do you recall that?
I do recall.
Okay. So to be consistent with the data you have here, well, let me ask this. How long with the test drive was to drive from the kennels to... the main house?
I know we did various ones. I'd have to look at the data. We did at various speeds. It was very
short. A
minute,
15 seconds?
That would be a lot, I would say.
Okay. So, and we know that Alex's phone is at the house, right, from 8. It got left at the house. It's not going anywhere since it was up the house with the family.
I just show no activity on it.
Right.
You can assume it is at the house.
But it starts showing activity again at 9:02 and 18 seconds. That's when the steps start.
That is correct. 283 steps.
So from that 8:55:36. To 9:02 with a minute and some seconds to get up to the house, you would have like 5 minutes if it were him to do everything and get back to the house to the phone. 5 minutes.
I think you're missing that the phone was actually locked at 8:49 for Maggie's phone. So the 8:55:36 is just when the backlight is off, but her phone locks forever at 8:49.
But it's moving around, right, at 8:53. You didn't look at the speed at which it's moving, but that could tell us something. There's a Siri activation. I'm just asking my question, Your Honor.
What's the question?
Her phone is moving around starting at 8:53, comma. There's a Siri activation near the start of that time, comma. And then there's a camera activation during this time and some orientation changes, and then it goes off. Is that all correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And you don't know how fast the phone was moving during that period, but that is known, just no one has looked. Is that correct?
So everything is estimation with the phone. It does not track your exact, you know, speed or distance or steps. It's all estimated. So exact numbers is unknown.
And you have, I assume from your testimony, you don't know why someone would take Maggie's phone but not Paul's phone?
I would not know. I mean, I'm not there.
I mean, given your job as a SLED mm-hmm. agent, I mean, would the fact that the camera was, the phone was somewhat in someone's hand and there was an attempt to take a picture, would that be an inference you could draw?
He never said an attempt to take a picture, from what I heard, but you'd have to ask a technical expert on exactly what that camera function was for.
Well, you see, the thing is that the technical experts, they're not going to say either, are they? It's some investigator is going to have to make some inferences from the data. And the question is it a fair inference that if the camera's in somebody's hand and they're trying to take a picture, that might be why the killers take that phone and not the phone that's in somebody's pocket?
So the way I...
Your Honor.
What's the basis for the objection?
Argumentative.
The response to... By the defense, any response?
Your Honor, I'm asking the investigator whether
what you're asking response to the objection. The objection is argumentative.
Your Honor, I do not believe it's argumentative. I'm asking if an inference would be fair.
I overrule the objection.
So the inference I'm looking at it is that the camera was trying to identify a face to unlock, which it did not. So that is the inference that I would look at that instead of taking a photo from a layperson perspective.
Right, except that's not an inference an investigator would make, correct? A technical expert would go and see what triggered the camera activation and tell that to an investigator, correct?
I am not the technical person.
And I think we covered in some previous questioning that the testimony has been that that's knowable, but no one has checked. Kind of switch over to Paul.
Okay.
And just to sort of summarize everything up, there doesn't seem to be any missed activity until the unread text message from Rogan at 8:49:35. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And is it correct that his screen does not ever come on again until after the 911 call?
Is screen coming on?
Yes, sir.
I believe it dies shortly after at like 10:30, so I think 10:36.
And I'm aware of the screen okay. coming on after the 911 call, but I'm asking, did it come on at any time between this text from Rogan and those 10 after 10 o'clock times?
Let me just double check. I show a display screen on at 10:20:08.
Okay, so the answer is no?
It does turn on. That's what you asked, correct?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was asking if it turns on before the 911 call.
Before the 911 call. For the whole day?
Well, it would be about an hour. 10 minutes, but...
I'm not seeing a screen on before the 911 call. And that 9 to...
Right. So incoming text frame. Messages or calls, if they were received, did not cause the screen to come on?
That is correct.
Is it possible, and I understand this may be a question for a technical person, but is it possible that that's because the battery was at 2%?
Like I said, I would not know that answer.
Did anyone ask, hey, why isn't the screen coming on these notifications?
Unfortunately, I think it's hard to tell, you know, with the experts, but that would be my assumption that it would be either low battery.
That's fair.
Trying to conserve the battery because you don't want the light takes so much power. So I would assume that would be the answer.
So after whatever happened after 8:49, his phone is not prompting him. He's not, it's not lighting up when things come in.
I don't know if it's vibrating or whatnot, but according to the data here, it is, it's not lighting up.
Now, I think the previous testimony was that whoever, if anyone saw his screen, lock screen, before the phone went dead, you know, after the 911 call, would have seen the yo text. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
They would have also seen this 8:49 text, right?
The 8:49.
35. Or at least a notification that there were multiple texts, correct?
I would assume so, that's correct.
And there were at least four incoming calls from Rogan between 9:10 and 10:08, is that correct?
I'm going to go off of your account.
9:10 and 28 seconds, 9:42 and 17 seconds. I think there's one at 9:57, one at 10:08.
Correct.
The one at 10:08, that would be during the 911 call, correct?
That is correct.
And that would be before, during the 911 call, before Alec Murdaugh leaves the scene to go up to the house and come back.
Based on the data, that's correct.
We don't actually know why the screen came on those two times, do we? At 9:10 and 18, and then 10, 18, and then 10:20.
We do not.
You know how long the screen stayed on those times?
I do not have that.
You don't know if it was 12 seconds? Okay. At the second one of those, the 10:20:08 screen on, doesn't the Alex Murdaugh's phone indicate he's walking at that time?
So it, you know, we have a start time and an end time. Doesn't mean he's walking during the whole time. But that is what the
well,
phone.
Is this the start, I'm sorry. Let me just ask: is this the start? Your Honor, it's just a clarification.
Did you? So as the witness starts talking, then you start talking. Who's talking? Were you talking?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
So the phone parses the data. It gives you a start time and an end time. Doesn't mean they're walking during that whole time. It just takes a start time and end time and gives you that data.
Sure.
So. To say that someone's walking during the whole time would be, you know, unreasonable.
After the 911 call, was Rogan the first person Alec Murdaugh called?
After the 911 call?
Yes, sir.
Calls at 10:06:14. That you said Alex called?
Yes, the first person he called after hanging up with 911. Was it Rogan?
I have at 10:17:46, he calls Randy Murdaugh.
And that's his brother, correct?
That is correct.
Who was the second person he called?
He iMessages Randy and then calls Randy Murdaugh again. And then John Marvin.
John Marvin is another brother, correct?
Yep, at 10:19.
And then the third time person he calls is Rogan, is that correct?
At that time, yes.
And is that about 2 minutes and 30 seconds after that first screen on time?
That's correct.
Okay. So not immediate, not the first person.
I think you're referring to that question that was previously during the 911 call. This is all after the 911 call.
Right. The question is, it's about 2.5 minutes after Paul's phone screen comes on that there's a call to Rogan, and it's the third person that Alec Murdaugh calls. Is that correct?
That was at 9:08. Wasn't the screen on?
No, 10:18 and 53 seconds.
That'd be correct.
So I think we went over that anyone who was looking at could see what was on Paul's screen would see multiple missed messages, calls from Rogan. right on the screen?
I would assume.
Even a call coming in during the 911 call?
I would assume, but...
Okay. So as an investigator, do you think it would be terribly unreasonable that after calling other family members, someone would call the person who is the best friend of the dead son, who had multiple missed messages and calls, and even a call coming in during the 911 call? Is calling that person to ask what happened, what's going on, is that, to you as an investigator, an unreasonable thing to do after calling other family members?
I would, as an investigator, I think that would be very odd, given the scene and the whole situation, that you're on the phone constantly, yes.
That you're standing there next to your dead son, his phone is ringing from
yep.
someone, and
mm-hmm.
you call that person after calling other people.
Yes, because I am standing over my son and wife, and it's just witnessing that for the first time, I would think that would be, to have someone on their phone constantly like that, right after, given the scene and the situation, yes, as an investigator, I would think that is very
It wouldn't be someone trying to find out what happened.
At that moment, that would be the last thing that would probably come through my mind as an investigator, looking at the scene, is trying to figure out what happened minutes after I discover it. I'd be in a state of shock if that was me personally.
And speaking of a state of shock, I think you have in the timeline later on, he reads some spam text message about, I think there's a picture of a woman in a bikini.
I wouldn't call it a spam text message. It's from Michael Gunn, who would be one of his friends.
A group text.
A group text, yeah.
And then he Googles the name of a restaurant in Edisto Beach. Is that correct?
That is what comes up on his phone extraction.
And doesn't he also call a videographer he hadn't spoken to in years?
Can you give me a page number to refer to?
Yes. Page 42, Brian White, last entry.
That's what the data shows.
So he would seem to be in a state of shock. None of that makes any sense, does it? You're not going to Google the name of a restaurant after you find your son murdered.
I'm not Alex Murdaugh. I don't know what he was thinking at that moment. Probably wouldn't be on my phone.
Really, you wouldn't be calling family?
I might be calling family, but I want to be
the testimony was that Rogan was family.
If you ask a question, if you want him to answer, you have to give him an opportunity to answer. Proceed.
I would not be Googling and doing other things with my phone, no.
Do you believe he was Googling a restaurant, or do you think he was fat fingering the phone because he was in shock?
I have to go off of the data, and that's what the data shows.
And you believe that calling family and calling someone that the prior testimony was like another son is unreasonable in the circumstances?
I would say so, yes. Given the fact that you just arrived to the scene, yes.
And had just arrived back to the scene, had actually been there at that point, 15, 20, 25 minutes, correct?
That's correct. I'd be doing anything I could to help my loved ones.
Now, kind of turning back to Maggie's phone, her screen was on at 9:06 and 12 seconds, right? That last orientation change.
Let me flip back to it. You said her screen was on?
Yes.
Have you said? Yeah, her phone was locked, but her screen, yeah, for the orientation from previous testimony, the screen had to be on for it to log the orientation changes.
So somebody, there was some movement of the phone between 9:06 and 12 seconds and 9:06 and 20 seconds.
That'd be my understanding given previous testimony, correct.
And in this period, 9:02 to 9:06 and 47 seconds, Alec Murdaugh is walking, I think, 283 steps in that time period.
In that timestamp period, correct.
Yeah. But her phone is not. No one's walking with her phone, correct?
The phone is not logging any kind of steps. I don't know if someone's walking with it, but it's not logging steps at that time.
But at that time, Alec Murdaugh's phone is logging steps.
His phone's logging from 9:02:18 to 9:06:47. I believe her last log was in the 8 o'clock, the 8:53 to 8:55.
And at 9:06 and 14 or 15 seconds, Alec Murdaugh calls her phone, correct?
That's correct.
So he calls her phone while walking. We're in a period in which his steps are being recorded by the phone, to be specific.
There's a begin time and an end time. He could have stopped walking a couple seconds, a couple minutes into it. It doesn't give us that precise data from these phone distractions.
And that time period that he stops walking is 9:06 and 47 seconds, correct? And the car, the Chevy Suburban, starts a second later after that, right?
From the data, correct.
So it's a fair inference that he ends that by walking to the car, getting in and turning it on.
I'm not sure when exactly he got in the car or how long he was sitting in the car before, but this is what the timestamps show, and this is what the vehicle start time shows, and the end time for the for the steps.
So his phone is stepping, walking, while he calls Maggie's phone, which is moving, but not stepping with him. Is that what the data shows?
That's your inference on the data, but.
Well, I mean, breaking it down, his phone is in a period of steps, mm-hmm. correct?
Unknown when there is steps just, during that
his
period.
His phone is in this time period of steps, correct?
Correct.
Her phone is not in any period of steps, correct?
Correct.
Her phone in this time period where the phone call's coming in, 9:06, 12 seconds, 20 seconds, there's some motion because there's an orientation change, correct?
That's correct.
And he's calling the phone during this period that his phone's in steps, right, at that moment, right?
I cannot say that he's actually in steps at 9:06, 12.
Yes, and you've said it, but his phone says there's this period that he's walking, and in that period, between the start and end times, he's calling her phone.
That is correct, but you can see during the 911 call too that there's times where someone could be stopped, someone could be walking, so we don't know if he stopped at 9:05:15 and did the orientation changes and he's right at the car. I don't know that.
Do we have any evidence that her phone and his phone ever moved together? Not speculation, but evidence showing that they're moving together. Same person moving at the same time with both phones.
Moving together, like physically moving or functioning in like?
Yes, that they're both moving. The same person is carrying both phones. They're moving at the same time.
I would argue that between 9:06:12 and 9:20, that the same person has both phones.
Because there's an orientation change and no steps on this phone.
You have an orientation change starting while someone's calling, looking at the phone during that time period.
And would it perhaps be reasonable that someone has that phone and an incoming call comes in, his screen says Alec Murdaugh, and he gets tossed out a window? Is that another fair possible explanation?
That could be your explanation.
Why would that explanation be less fair than what you just said, based on the data?
So how you interpret the data.
On the drive to Alameda and back, did Alec take any detours from the expected route?
Not that I could see. The route.
That's not
with, his interviews.
And in your timeline, we occasionally see these, I guess, infotainment systems coming on, but nothing else happening. The prior testimony was that even the FBI engineer doesn't know why that is. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. He said it could be, you get close to the vehicle. Sometimes when, newer GM vehicles, you get close to it and you can kind of hear a little buzzing noise. It's almost like the system's booting up. That's how he described it to me. Could be the key fob being close. It could be the car unlocking, locking, door opening. Just, they don't know what actually caused it, but it's just booting up and running in the background.
When you were looking at the sort of going in and out of park data,
mm-hmm.
Did you look at the data for other days than June 7th?
I did not.
So you wouldn't know whether on other days there are periods in which it seems to go in and out of park repeatedly in a short period of time?
I would not.
You wouldn't know if that happened on 6-4, 6-5, or also 6-6?
I would not, no. I was focusing on June 7th, 2021.
Would looking at those other days and seeing the same thing happen inform your interpretation of seeing it going in and out of park on 6-7?
I was just looking on the day of the murders.
I mean, if it did that every single day, would it seem unusual to also do it on 6-7?
That'd be a question for Mr. Falkowski, who actually looks at that data as
would
a profession. It would.
He's going to make inferences about behavior based on the data, or is he just going to say what the data is?
He could say what the data is, but I wouldn't know an inference. I don't know someone's driving pattern and how they shift, and how would I know that?
And he would.
But how would I know that?
Well, the question really is, if it happens every day, is there anything unusual about it happening on 6-7?
A period of days is not every day. You'd have to look at a wide range of days to get.
How many?
I don't know.
If it happened every day for the preceding 3 days, would that be enough?
Every day is a new day. I would not, something could happen different on a different day. I mean, I don't know how you could compare that data. You go different places, you do different things. Different things happen during drives. I don't think you could accurately show that.
You shared sort of towards the end some text messages, and one of them seemed to make a reference regarding possible drug use. Do you remember that?
I do.
And that was dated May 6th.
Do you have it? Do you have the copy pulled out? Are you referring to the text from Paul?
Yes, I am.
To Alex. Okay. I have May 6, 2021 at 10:52.
And then there were some Google searches by Maggie Murdaugh.
That is correct.
Are you aware of a text from Alec regarding pills to Maggie on May 7?
I would have to see the text.
Show you what's been marked as defendant's 138, which I believe.
Yep. I am very sorry that I do this all to you. I love you. Yep.
Objection. No objection to the exhibit, Your
Honor. I offer what's been marked as defendant's 138.
Say, admit it.
Okay, hold on. So this was Mr. Murdaugh's response to the being confronted about the pills that you previously read?
I can only assume this is from Alex to Maggie. The text message I read was from Paul to Alex.
So his family was aware of his drug issues, correct? I mean, from the texts.
I would assume from the text.
And he was aware that they were aware, correct?
Correct.
And they appear to be loving and supporting.
Well, this is Alex to Maggie. If you read other text messages, she never responds to this that day, from what I saw. So I don't know, unless you have what she sent back, or you can't ask them, I don't know if they were loving and supporting of it. This is from Alex to Maggie.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to see further text messages.
I beg your pardon, though.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Direct.
May the police court.
I was guilty.
All right, we
have Peter up. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, having gone to the jury room for a short break.
That wraps up the fourth segment of our continuing coverage in the trial of Alec Murdaugh here on day number 18 as the trial continues to chug along. It's the 17th of February, 2023, as it all takes place. I'm Tony Bruschi. More to come. Stay with us.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LifeLock and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.